You're listening to the weekly teaching podcast of South Hills Church in Corona, California. We hope that what you hear today inspires you to laugh, question, think, and grow. If you'd like to connect with us further, hit us up online at southhills.org/corona. Thanks for listening in. We hope you enjoy this week's episode.
The title of my message today, if you're taking notes, is The Complications of Freedom. The Complications of Freedom. And I want to begin with a little bit of a thought experiment. What I wonder is, do you remember what you did the first time you got a little taste of freedom? Do you remember what you did the first time you got a little taste of freedom? Some of you are already chuckling to yourself because you realize that this is a trick question. Because you probably did not do the best, smartest, most wise thing you could have done. You were probably a kid, right? And somebody left you unattended. Somebody left you unsupervised, and there was nobody looking over your shoulder, nobody telling you, making sure you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. And you had this realization that, like, for a brief moment, you could pretty much do whatever you wanted to do, right? Like, you could, and that is a powerful thought, right? I mean, even for us as adults, it's still powerful, but as a kid, to realize there is no one here to tell me what to do, I can do whatever I want to, and, like, there's no one around. They might not even find out what I did. I might be able to completely get away with this forever. Like, when you realize that, when you figure that out, what did you do, okay? And this is what I would say. Most of you are probably going to eat lunch after this. And I would just say, write this question down. Ask the people you're eating lunch with. Because whatever story they're going to tell you, if it's not a little bit crazy, they're lying to you, okay? Because most of us, we don't respond super well when we kind of wake up to this reality. For me, I don't know that I remember the very first time. The first thing I can remember is this moment where I was at my house. This is when I was a kid. I was probably like maybe 8 years old. I was hanging out with one of my buddies who lived on the block, and he was a year younger than me, and then his brother was a year younger than him. And so we're all there together, and my dad left us alone at my house unsupervised to go run some errands. This is how you know it happened a long time ago, right? Because, like, I would never do this with my kids these days. Be like, yeah, there's a bunch of little kids. Let's just let them be in charge of the house. I'll be gone for 2 hours, right? That sounds crazy, but, like, back in the 80s, it was like, yeah, just sprinkle some animal crackers on the ground. They'll be fine, right? We didn't even care. No parents cared, right? So my dad left, and I'm hanging out with these two other kids, and the first idea we had was, we go, we should climb on the roof of my house, right? And so we did. We got on the roof of my house, and I lived in a two-story house, and it had one of those roofs that was like, had like a 45 degree angle. And so we were sitting like on the spine of the roof and just kind of looking down at everything. And right as soon as we get up there and we're looking around, we're like, someone should ride a big wheel off the roof of this house. That sounds like an amazing idea. Some of you are bought into the amazingness of this idea already. Some of you are like, this is probably not going to end super good. I'm bracing myself for that, right? For the ending of the story being in the emergency room. This is what happens, though. Like, little boys left to their own devices are not going to come up with good ideas. Like, it just never, it doesn't happen. This is why we need, and honestly, let's just be real. As boys grow older and become men, left to their own devices do not come up with a lot of good ideas, right? You get a bunch of guys together, and it's just like the IQ drops. Like, we start like daring each other to do stuff. It gets weird, especially if there's alcohol involved. And so, like, it just, we need women to just be like, maybe think about that one a little bit. Maybe not, maybe we don't do that deal, right? So my dad had left me, and we came up with this dumb idea. And of course, like, I felt like it needed to happen, right? Like, it had to occur, but I didn't want to do it like not first, right? And so I tried to convince my friend Justin to do it. He didn't want to do it. And after a long debate, we decided it was like wrong to make the dog do it. And so we tried to convince his brother to do it. And he agreed. He like reluctantly agreed. And he's like 2 years younger than me. And he was like, okay, because we had promised to give him 2 Reese's peanut butter cups. And we also ensured him that we would take all of the safety precautions, which is something we probably heard on an announcement on a roller coaster ride. We didn't even know what that meant. And it was a lie. We didn't even have peanut butter cups, right? And if we did, we probably would have ate them ourselves. So like we got them to do this thing. And so this is what we did for safety precautions. We got like, we got this, the big wheel, which is a rainbow bright big wheel, by the way, in case you're keeping score. And so we put it on the roof and we got a baseball batting helmet and we put it on this kid. And it was too loose and totally gonna fly off. And then we had all of these socks. And I don't know if you fold your socks where you do the thing where you like ball them up in a ball. So we had all these like sock balls, right? And we duct taped them to his body. And we're like, he's practically invincible now, right? And then the last thing that we did to make it super safe was we got the trash can that we, you know, we normally wheel to the street, and we took all the bags out of it and we just filled it with pillows. And we put it where we thought he would probably land, right? Because we're like, he'll come off, he'll be in the pillow bin, and then everything's gonna be good. He's got the helmet, he's got the sock balls, he's fine, right? So we get up to the roof and we're up there, and then he starts getting nervous, he doesn't want to do it or whatever, and so we're trying to like, you know, nicely give him, you know, some encouragement, which we did by just shoving him. And so we pushed him and the thing goes down the roof and he did not hit the bin, just to let you know. And he actually died. No, he didn't. That didn't happen. Some of you got super nervous inside, though. No, he didn't die. He just broke his arm. Now, when you think that he died and find out that he just broke his arm, you're like, no big deal, right? Which is what I thought when I told my dad the same thing. He did not agree that it was like okay that he just broke his arm. And so it did not go well. Like he totally missed the bin, broke his arm, wouldn't talk to me for like several months. It just was the whole thing was pretty bad, right? Like it's just not a wise use probably of our freedom. And I know some of you are sitting there judging me right now, which it doesn't feel fair because I feel like the truth is chances are super good that you did something equally as stupid when you've got your first taste of freedom as well, right? Because it's kind of just what we do as people, right? Human nature is such that, you know, when most of us get an early opportunity to do whatever we want, what we want most is often to see if it feels good to do what we've been told is bad, right? This is the way that our brains work. We're like, is it really that bad? I mean, like, I can do whatever I want, and kind of the thing I want to do is to see if that thing is really as bad as people have tried to tell me that it is, because it seems awesome, right? It seems like it would be fun. It seems like it would be enjoyable, and I want to just check it out. I want to just see for myself. I want to try it, right? And so, you know, you did what I did. You went for it in the moment, and I don't know what that was for you. Maybe for you it was like me. It was when you got left home alone, and you leveraged that freedom to do something stupid. Maybe it was like the moment that you slept over at a friend's house for the first time and you weren't under your parents' roof, and so you kind of tried to see what you could do or get away with. Or maybe for you it was the time you borrowed your parents' car for the first time and tried to see like how fast this thing can really go and what it can do. You know, maybe that was it for you, or maybe it was like the first time you got your very own credit card, and you were like, this is a lot of freedom. I wonder what we could do with this kind of freedom, and it didn't turn out well, and it later turned into a confession you had to make to someone when you got engaged, right, and it got weird after that. Maybe for you, you know, it was the day you turned 21, right? Maybe for you, it was like basically your entire freshman year of college, right? That was the time where you're like, I have this freedom. How far can we stretch? Maybe for you, it was like, it was all of these things at once, okay? We call that Vegas, right? That's what that is. I don't know what it was for you, right? But we have these moments in life, and we try things. And honestly, I don't think the reason why we push the envelope is because we want to be bad. I think it's because we want to be happy. I really do. I think at the end of the day, you know, we don't do something because we're like, I want to be bad and evil and do horrible things. We're like, no, I feel like if I can get on the other side of this boundary, that there may be happiness on the other side, that maybe some of the things that people have told me or maybe some of the things that I've learned maybe aren't true. And I want to know what I might be able to experience if I crossed this line. I think there's something inside of all of our minds that assumes that any rule that we don't fully understand is probably pointlessly preventing us from just enjoying our lives. And so we, you know, we push past those boundaries. And sometimes we end up finding out the hard way why someone put a rule there in the first place, right? And some of you know what I'm talking about because, you know, you did this and you end up getting hurt or going broke or breaking a bone or wrecking a car or waking up next to a stranger, right? Or losing an opportunity or losing someone's respect. And other times we end up finding out that the bad thing that we kind of thought, you know, like seemed kind of like it might be good actually ended up being like really good. It ended up being awesome, right? And we were like, man, I got wrong information. And that's honestly why we take the risk, right? If every time someone told us that something maybe was not a good idea, and every time someone pushed past that boundary, it always ended in tragedy, there wouldn't be enough incentive for us to push to the other side. And yet, for us, there's a little bit of a chance that maybe it's going to end differently for me. Maybe I don't have all of the facts. Maybe, just maybe, I'm the exception to the rule. And honestly, we have always been this way, human beings. We have always wanted to be happy, and we have always been sort of suspicious of anything that looks like it might limit our happiness. It's sewn into the fabric of who we are as humans. In fact, so much so that at the very beginning of what we now have as the Bible, so after like the table of contents and that page where it's like, this Bible was presented to Graham from Grandma, like that whole deal, there's Genesis, which at the beginning of which is a creation, a Hebrew creation poem that introduces us to two people, the only two people that live together in this beautiful paradise garden. Their names are Adam and Eve. And inside of this poem, they're basically told that there's only really one rule, one boundary, that they are not allowed to eat the fruit from this particular tree at the center of the garden, and they're fine with that initially. But then the more they think about it, because they're human, right? They start thinking like, well, but like when you told me I wasn't supposed to do it, it kind of makes me want to do it because I feel like what kind of happiness are you hiding from me on the other side of this boundary? And so they have a conversation with the talking snake, as you do, and the snake is just like, it's no big deal, just check it out, whatever. And like, so they eat this fruit, and it ends up having horrible consequences. They end up getting ejected from the garden, and they end up moving into a different kind of life outside of the paradise that they were created for. And they discovered that although they were free to do anything, they ended up regretting using their freedom to do that particular thing. And I think this brings up really the question that I want to talk to you about today as we explore the book of Galatians together is, what is freedom? What is freedom? And what is its purpose? Because I think a lot of us have lived enough life to realize it's complicated, right? Like, freedom as an idea is complex. I mean, if you're free, you ought to be able to do pretty much anything. But anything is also kind of a broad term, right? Like, it's pretty all-inclusive. And if you tell people that they're free to do anything, some of them might want to do really bad things. And if you tell humans not to do certain things, like, they become suspicious, right? And they kind of want to do those certain things you told them not to do even more than they originally wanted to do them. So you could make a list of all of the bad things that, you know, people probably shouldn't do, but then how are you going to be able to think of them all, right? Because people are very creative, and they can think of a lot of new, interesting, bad things to get themselves wrapped up into. And then also, you might have the problem of the list could potentially down the road become a little bit outdated because, you know, the context that made certain things bad, like that context evaporates and now those things are no longer bad for like the same reasons. And then what about all the new things that might pop up, like things that like come about after the list was already made, like who's going to add stuff to the list and take stuff off? I mean, who's running this list? It sounds like a huge, you know, Excel spreadsheet project. Like, who is responsible to do this thing? So many questions about how to manage freedom. And this really is why Paul, the Apostle Paul, writes this letter to some of the very first Christians to address some of these questions. He asks these questions of like, what is freedom? What is its purpose? And how do we live that out? What does that look like? And so we're going to begin reading today in Galatians chapter 5. verses 13 through 15. If you have your Bibles, you can turn there. Galatians chapter 5. And this is what Paul is speaking to this church and honestly to us and to our church about this idea. He starts off by saying this about freedom. He says, it's absolutely clear that God has called you to a free life, which is great news, right? I mean, that like, some of you are like, that's all I needed today. Like, done. Close the Bible. Let's go to Chili's. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. You're free. God wants you to be free. That's awesome. That's incredible news, right? And it's true. Like, he really does. The reality of it is, and Paul spends a lot of time talking about this towards the beginning of his letter, is that you are loved and accepted by God no matter what you have done or even no matter what you will do. Like, God freely gives us his grace and peace, no strings attached. It's in his nature to do so. And that means that you are free to do whatever you like without fear of condemnation from this God, fear of being separated from him. There's no laws or rules that you have to follow in order to be accepted by him. This is huge. This is what makes the grace of God and the gospel message of Jesus so incredibly radical. So radical, in fact, that it makes some of us nervous. You're like, that is a lot of free, like just unconditional freedom to give to people, and they don't have to earn acceptance. Like, what might happen? And some of us are wondering that right now. And he continues to write on. He says, it's absolutely clear that God has called you to a free life. Just make sure that you don't use this freedom as an excuse to do whatever you want to do. Wait, what? Some of you are like, did I read that correctly? I thought that was the point of freedom, right? Like, you're free, now you can do whatever you want to do, right? Like, so what's actually happening here, right? You know, I'm free to do whatever I want to do, but I shouldn't use the fact that I'm free to do whatever I want to do as an excuse to go and do whatever I want to do. Anybody confused yet? Right? It sounds like, wait, what are you talking about right here? And then he gives his reasoning. He gives the reason why he's telling people this. Just make sure that you don't use this freedom as an excuse to do whatever you want to do and destroy your freedom. That's an interesting idea. Right? That you can destroy your freedom, that you can leverage your freedom to destroy freedom. This means that you are free to do anything, including things that will destroy you and other people. You ever exercised your freedom in a way that destroyed freedom itself? You don't have to raise your hand on this one, by the way. Just more of a rhetorical sort of a question for you to reflect on in your own heart, right? But you've seen this happen before, especially if you've been around, children for any amount of time. Little kids do this often where, they'll be playing together like on a playground or in a sandbox, and you have one kid that's maybe a little bit bigger than the other kids, and somebody's playing with a toy, and one kid gets up and goes over and is just like thinking, I would like that toy, and I am free to do whatever I want to. And so he punches the other kid in the throat, right? Like, and so it sounds extreme, but like, I've seen it. So, not my children, right? But like other people, my wife's kids, which we had together. But like they, and then he takes the toy, right? Because he has the ability to, and like he's pursuing his own happiness, and so he takes the toy, and then the other kid cries, and even if there's not like a parent or, you know, a teacher there to like separate the two and whatever, that kid is still not going to want to go and hang out with the kid who's the throat puncher, right? Like, nobody wants to like buddy up with that one. And so it ends up happening that people separate, and then you have the kid who punched someone's throat to take the toy eventually just sitting in the corner of a room by themselves with a toy that they used to want but now no longer even really care about, isolated from the people that they actually came to originally hang out with, feeling lonely, feeling isolated, feeling disconnected. This is an example of leveraging your freedom to destroy freedom. Feel free to contextualize that like on a global adult scale if you'd like. But like, here's the reality of it. What Paul is trying to do is he's trying to raise all sorts of questions, which this does, about the nature of freedom and wealth and privilege and power. He's asking the question, like, what is the point of these things? Like, what are they for? And like, if you find yourself in a situation where you do have freedom and wealth and privilege and power, like, what are you going to do with those things? Because there are certain ways of being free that actually have the ability to destroy freedom. His point is essentially this, boiled down into a nutshell, is this. Just because you could doesn't mean you should. Just because you could doesn't mean you should. Some of you are like, I thought my grandma invented that. She stole it from the Apostle Paul. And it's finally time somebody set you straight, okay? Your grandma is a plagiarizer. I didn't want to say it to you, but that's really what's going on here, right? Just because you could doesn't mean you should. And then he continues on. This is what he says. He says, rather, use your freedom to serve one another in love. That's how freedom grows. Now, that's interesting. That's not the instinct of most of us, right? Most of us, that's not the first thing that pops into our mind when we bump up against freedom. Like, think about this in the context of your own life, right? When you have absolutely zero obligations, right? Let's say that you get a little bit of time in your schedule, and you don't have to be anywhere, and you don't have to do anything. You have no obligations, right? Let's say, or maybe like you have some money, and you don't owe it to anyone, and you earned it, and it's yours, and you're free to spend it on anything that you could possibly think of, right? Like, or maybe you get a little decision-making power and you are the one in authority, or you have influence and you can kind of do whatever you want to. Our first thought is usually, how can I leverage this to serve myself? Right? Like, how can I leverage what I have to get what I want, to make myself happy, to stack the deck in my favor? But Paul is saying something totally different about the purpose of freedom. And I want you to write this down if you don't write anything else down. This is really the crux of the theological idea that he's trying to get at inside of this entire chapter. He's saying that the purpose of freedom is to produce more freedom. The purpose of freedom is to produce more freedom. And we do this by selflessly leveraging what we have on behalf of someone else. By selflessly leveraging what we have on behalf of someone else. This is a totally different way of thinking. This is a radical way of thinking. Because it changes the questions we ask ourselves to decide whether or not something is a good or appropriate idea for ourselves, right? It changes the question, because instead of the question being, am I free to do it, the question becomes, will doing it produce more freedom? So sure, I can do it, but will doing it produce more freedom? To go a step further, it changes the question from, instead of the question being, will this send me to hell later, the question becomes, will this bring heaven to earth for others right now? And let me tell you, these are the questions that Jesus was interested in. And when I grew up, the big deterrent to try and stay away from something, to do the right thing and not do the wrong thing, whatever that was that if you did the bad thing, you were going straight to hell, okay? And man, there were all sorts of things and experiences to threaten us with that reality, that even though, like, I grew up in a home and I believed in Jesus, that I always had this feeling that if I ever messed up or stepped out of line, that God was just waiting to be like, I can't believe you did that. Well, he's going straight to hell, right? That's what I thought. That was my picture. I remember having moments where I would be at my house and realize that there was like nobody else around, and I would think about a bad thing that I had done. Like, man, I did steal those Reese's peanut butter cups, and I promised to give them to that kid, but I ate them myself. That was wrong. And feeling like I was going to go straight to hell, that maybe actually the rapture had taken place, and that it was just me and Kirk Cameron, and or Nick Cage, depending on whichever storyline you favor, right? And like, so I would call my grandpa, because I'm like, that guy is never going to go to hell, right? Like, he is like the most spiritual person I know. He even reads the King James, right? And so I would call him, and if he answered the phone, I'd be like, whoo, it's all good. Another day ascending. You know what I mean? Like that in my mind as a kid. But that was the deterrent, right? That was the question of like, you know, will this send me to hell later? And if I thought it would, then I probably wouldn't do it. But Jesus doesn't seem to be interested in this question all throughout his teachings in the New Testament. In fact, what he seems preoccupied with is a better question of, will doing this thing bring heaven to earth for others right now? Jesus prayed it this way: your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. This is what he was obsessed with, bringing his kingdom to earth through the actions and investment of his followers. And this is huge. This is a massive paradigm shift, especially for those of us that grew up in Americanized Christianity. He goes on to say this: for everything we know about God's word is summed up in a single sentence: love others as you love yourself. That is an act of true freedom. Other translations say it like this. They say all of the law and the prophets can be summed up like this: love your neighbor as yourself. Which is great, but it begs this question: why would you need to summarize all of the laws and the prophets? Why would you need to distill, if you have to do all of these things, why would you need to distill it down into one thought, one sentence, one statement or principle? And this is the reason. Jesus is trying to shift the focus of his followers from obsessing over the particulars of the law to internalizing the principles of the kingdom. He wants to move people away from obsessing over all these little particulars of the law to internalizing the principles of the kingdom. He wants to move people away from the mentality of, hey, just make sure you never do that. And make sure you definitely focus on doing this. He wants to move people away from that and to this new place that is, organize your entire life around this one guiding foundational principle. And if you do, like, that idea is what all of these particulars were built on in the first place. Prioritize this, not that. And again, this is a shift in a worldview for us, because it is the move from me to we. And this is what God is doing. It aims my life toward collective wholeness as my priority. The scriptural word for this is shalom. We talked a lot about it on week one of this series. Collective wholeness as opposed to individual happiness. Which brings us to this idea that if what is required for your individual happiness is something that destroys the collective wholeness, it is a misuse of freedom. Then Paul goes on to say this. He says, if you bite and ravage each other, now it's starting to sound like a vampire novel, it's getting weird. If you bite and ravage each other, watch out, in no time at all you'll be annihilating each other, and then where will your precious freedom be then? Which sounds like something a dad would say in a lecture. Then where will your precious freedom be? Like, whoa, get a little worked up. What he's saying is this: when you leverage your freedom to take whatever you want in order to make yourself happy, that you're going to get to a place in which your freedom will come into direct opposition with somebody else's freedom. Because they're leveraging their freedom to take what they want in order to be happy, and you're leveraging your freedom to take what you want in order to be happy. And eventually, it's going to put you in a place in which you are forced to ask the question, whose freedom is more important, mine or theirs? Who deserves to get what they want first? Who's going to back down first? Who's going to serve the other first? Who is going to submit first? When we both want the same thing and only one could have it, what happens? And Jesus says that that's where a lot of biting and fighting and ravaging and warring and annihilating comes from. And Jesus' answer when he was here on earth was always the same. You want to know who loves first? Who serves first? Who lays down their life first? The Christ follower. The one who has truly placed a connection with Christ at the center of their life. They're the ones who lay down their life first. This is the way we like to say it here at South Hills. We have this value that goes like this. We give up things we love for things we love even more. We give up things we love for things we love even more. It's not about what we have to do. It is about who we want to be. And I would tell you about this church, the reality of us being able to do what we do is because there are people who take their freedom seriously and they lay their lives down. They give up things they love for things they love even more. The reason why we're able to turn the lights on and we're able to have incredible kids ministry and we're able to air condition the facility and amplify the microphones is because people like you, you give to this church. And not because somebody makes you, and not because you couldn't think of anything else to do with your money. This is a weird thing. I've noticed that everyone who gives here, it's never because they couldn't think of one good thing to do with the money, right? I'm just like, I have all this money. I don't know what to do. I can't think of one vacation I'd like to take. I can't think of anything I'd want to buy. I can't think of anything my wife wants me to buy her. I can't think of an upgrade that we could get to our house or a nicer car. I can't think of anything else I would like to do with this money. That's never the case. It's that somebody comes to a point in their life where they're like, I'm free to do whatever I want to with this money. And yet more than I love all of these things, which are all great, I love the fact that I get to invest in a place in which everyone is welcome, in which there are no perfect people allowed, in which no matter what I have done, I can show up and be seen and loved and noticed and accepted for exactly where I'm at and exactly what I'm going through and exactly like where my head is at and what I believe at this moment in time, that I am granted the grace and peace of God. And I love that I get to invest into a place that is dedicated in being that for all of my friends and family and neighbors. And as much as I love this, I love that even more. This church runs on volunteers. And people that serve here don't serve because they can't think of anything else they would rather do or that would be fun to do on a Sunday, right? It's not that they're like, man, I can't think of anything that would be enjoyable. There are zero shows on Netflix I would like to watch, right? Not true, right? It's that they're like, as much as I love that, as much as a beach day would be fun, as much as I could do this, this, or this, which I love, what I love even more is being able to lay my life down for other people and create an environment through my service in which other people are seen and loved and accepted. And so what does that look like for us on a day-to-day basis? Outside of the church. The truth is that you have seen stories like this before. You have seen stories in which people leverage their freedom in order to produce more freedom for somebody else. I think about this time when Gretchen and I were first married. It was probably like year 3 or 4. And we were driving one car and it broke down. And we didn't know how we were going to fix it. It was hundreds of dollars. We didn't have the money. It was outside of our normal budget, and we lived so far away from where I worked, and we didn't know what we were going to do. And I had friends that were like, just ride your bike. And I'm like, it's like 5 miles away, and we live in Arizona. It's like 120 degrees outside. That's like riding, like doing a spin class in an oven, you know? And as a large man, I will die quickly. Like, that. It's not, I feel like your solution is you were trying to like kill me so that my wife can get the life insurance and pay off the car that way. And if that's your move, like, I don't appreciate that. You know what I mean? We got home one day and the Haida key, like where the Haida key was, everything was disrupted and somebody had taken the key and gotten into our house. And we were like, man, another thing, right? And we get in our house and we're looking around, we're trying to figure out what was taken. And we realized quickly that nothing was taken. In fact, what happened was somebody broke into our house and they didn't take anything, they left something. They put in different places around our house, they hid money. And I will tell you this, I'm still okay with this type of break-in. So if you, I will straight up tell you where my Haida key is, where I live, some personal financial goals that I have. It was a big deal for us. We're like walking around the house and like after a while it starts to be, if you feel like you're at an Easter egg hunt, you know what I mean? But like for adults with cash, which sounds awesome, doesn't it? And we're like skipping around like, I found a 20, look at this thing. And we collected it all and there was a few hundred dollars there that somebody had put in our house. And it was enough to fix our car. And we were so elated and we were thinking about like who could have done this? And it occurred to my wife like that she knew who it was. It was this couple that lived around the corner from our house. And when we figured out it was them, honestly, we felt guilty because they didn't have a lot of money. And we knew that like with this money, there's so many things they could do for their house and their family. And it felt wrong to take it. And so I went over to this guy's house and I handed him back the money. And I just said, man, I can't take this from you, man. Like, I know you, like, and you need this. You could use it. And he's like, no, you're not taking it, first of all. I'm giving it to you. And secondly, it came from a special savings account we have. And he said something I'll never forget. He said, the only reason why we set it aside was so we could give it away. The only reason we set it aside was so we could give it away. That's what freedom is for. I think of one of my sisters. We adopted her when she was a teenager out of a very abusive situation. And she lived with us through high school and college and pieced her life back together. And she's a hard worker. She worked her way through medical school. She got an incredible job. She makes great money and she does not live an extravagant life. And I mean, it got to the place where I started to wonder, like, what she's spending her money on. Like, she was saving it, setting it all to the side for something. And then she called and told us that she, one day she was about to adopt two little boys, both of whose mothers had been doing heavy drug use when they were pregnant with the little boys. The little boys who both would have a lot of developmental challenges as they grew up. And she took this money that she earned, that she was free to do whatever she wanted to with, and invested it so they could have a home and a family and get their medical bills paid and invite them into a clean start in their life. That's what freedom is for. It makes me think of this guy from my last church who we always talked about getting coffee, and he was like, he's never available. He had one day off a week. It was Saturday, and I always wanted to get with him on Saturday morning, and he never had time on Saturday morning. And I was starting to get frustrated, and I went to his wife, and I'm like, what is the deal with this guy? Like, what is he doing on Saturday morning? And she's like, he'll never tell you, but I'll tell you what he's doing. He has a friend that he was in the army with, and his friend died, but his father is very, very old. And he doesn't have any family left. And so on Saturday mornings, he gets in his car on his one day off and he drives 2 hours to this other town and he sits with the man and he reads to him because he has no one else. That's what freedom is for. I think of when I was in high school, this kid that was super different. He got made fun of all the time, and it's like everybody took all of their insecurity and projected it on him. And I wish I could say that I was at a place where I stuck up for him, but I was too afraid. There was this kid in our school who was on the wrestling team, is super popular. halfway through the first semester, he started taking his tray. This kid who got made fun of started sitting out in the hallway underneath this trophy case. This kid who was the wrestler started taking his tray and going out and sitting next to the other kid under the trophy case. And every day for like a whole semester. And because of it, all of the ridicule and all of the mockery and all of the making fun of now got directed at not just one, but both of them. But he kept getting his tray and kept going out there every single day. That's what freedom is for. I think of this girl who was in the youth group when I was a youth pastor, who worked so hard. She's about 17 years old, to raise money to go on this missions trip. She'd always dreamt of going to this country and seeing it and serving the people. And she worked so hard to raise every last penny, over $1,500. She was going to go with one of her friends, and her friend's grandma was going to pay. And towards the last minute, the grandparents, for whatever reason, weren't going to be able to pay anymore. And so her friend wasn't going to get a go. And this girl, who worked so hard for this money, who was free to do with it whatever she wanted, asked me to transfer it to the other girl's account so she could go instead. That's what freedom is for. See, the truth of the matter is that you are free to do with what God has given you whatever you want to. You can cross whatever boundaries you like. You can do whatever things you have been told are bad. And guess what? God will still love you. He will still give you grace and mercy. He will still embrace you. And guess what? You may even get to see heaven. But you will have wasted your life. Because the point of doing something or not doing something with your freedom is not, is this going to send me to hell now? It's, will this thing that I'm going to invest my freedom in, will this thing bring heaven to earth for somebody else right here and right now? This is what freedom is for. It's to produce more freedom in the people around us. And Jesus spent time on earth, and Paul wrote letters to wake us up as followers of Jesus, to say your life is about something more than just doing what you want to make yourself happy. It is about collective wholeness. And when you submit yourself to this, when you lay your life down on its behalf, you begin to discover something deeper than happiness: joy. This is what God wants for you. And even if you don't want to participate, God is so good, He will still give you the freedom. Would you bow your heads across this room this morning? Father, I am so thankful for the freedom that you have given me, the freedom that you have given us. God, in this moment, we just want to pause our lives and just acknowledge that, God, you have given us what we did not earn and what we do not deserve: absolute, unconditional acceptance. No matter what we say, no matter what we do, God, your love for us is still there. It is never ending. And God, I pray that you would write on the corridors of our heart the truth of what that freedom is for. God, that we would learn to leverage what we have been given: our time, our money, our energy. God, that we would invest it into furthering the freedom of other people, to bringing peace and grace and goodness into the lives of those around us, and God, bringing heaven to earth in any way that we possibly can. God, give us the ability to be wise with the freedom we have been afforded. In your name, Jesus, amen.
Thanks again for listening to this week's message from South Hills Church in Corona, California. we hope you'll continue to connect with us online. We'd love to hear your story, field your questions, and learn how this ministry is impacting your life. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by searching South Hills Corona.